The DeFalco Files is an entertainment-based program. Some memories of certain events might be fuzzy. All opinions are that of the host. Content might not be appropriate for children and some adults. Listener discretion is advised. And remember, the truth is here. Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting presents The DeFalco Files with FSW owner Joe DeFalco and your host, Matt Michaels.
Hey everybody, Matt Michaels here on The DeFalco Files with the owner and creator of Future Stars of Wrestling, FSW, here in Las Vegas, Joe DeFalco. Joe, how you doing today?
Doing all right. You know, we had the big show this weekend. You know, everything went pretty well. We went way longer than we wanted to. We did it on our own network to where the pay-per-view was there. And, you know, hiccups and just working on things that, you know, we intend to improve on. But bottom line is it was, you know, the best show we've done since last year's Mecca. So,
absolutely. And just for anyone who might not have done the pay-per-view, I highly encourage getting the pay-per-view. I didn't know what to expect, and I was very pleased. Like you said, it's a new thing. You know, there were some issues with feed timing and, you know, just having the regular aches and pains of figuring something new out. But at the same time, affordable price, you also subscribe to the network and you have a great variety of things to choose from. Do you see this as the going forward point where, you know, now all you have to do is tighten up time and, you know, do just a little more polishing on the, you know, interaction of graphics and that kind of thing? Does this look like it's the feasible future for your big events?
It does, but that doesn't mean we're not going to utilize Fight TV. Right. You know, like this Friday we have a women's show, and I think their database will help us, you know, and that's also what we're looking to do. So we did the show on Saturday, and we did it through our own pay-per-view ways. And because of doing it live there, we were actually trying to do it on Fight TV also. That way, you know, with their database, there's a lot of fans who might not have been aware of the show, but that seems to be a conflict of interest. You know, we're still looking to hopefully put a replay version on Fight TV. That way, you know, whatever buys we get, it may be a smaller percentage, but it's obviously people who are not aware of who FSW is unless they went through Fight TV. So we're going to go back and forth, but we're also going to look into things. Nobody was aware that it was a 3-hour time limit and the feed cut off. And, you know, our production crew was quick to get it on the homepage, I guess. But, you know, I'm not sure if everybody got the memo that it moved. And it wasn't as if, you know, it was halfway through. You know, I got the message from you and it was, you know, halfway, 2/3 through the semi-main event.
Right.
So bottom line is that was more than 3 hours. So I don't know the exact time they cut it off. So it had to be, you know, closer to 3 hours and 15 minutes when they cut it off.
So, yeah, it was somewhere in that time frame between 10:05 and 10:15 that it cut. Yeah. It reminded me of course, the infamous 1998 Halloween Havoc debacle for WCW.
Yeah, sometimes things just go off the air.
And it's good things, because that was a great match back then. And here you had a wonderful match with Hammerstone defeating the big man Graves for the FSW. This is his third reign.
He is the first three-time FSW heavyweight champion. The main event, that went more than almost 25 minutes. And, you know, the difference now and then was the couple times Hammerstone and Graves fought. They were on different sides, and Hammerstone had turned on Graves. But this one was, you know, full of respect before, during, and after the match. And, you know, those guys gave it their all. You know, it was a long night. You know, they could have cut it short if they really wanted to, and we kind of joked a little bit about it. But they hadn't worked each other in a few years. So, wow. You know, and it was a big moment. So with Hammerstone winning the championship, you know, both guys wanted to go out. You know, Graves last night as champion, you know, he wanted to show his legacy, right. You know, because we talked about the legacy of, you know, the FSW heavyweight champions. But Graves is a guy who's really not pursuing, you know, doing it at a different level. Right. Like, he lives in Arizona and barely works there. Like, he does not really like working a lot of places, you know, other than FSW. So he's an FSW guy. Yeah. You know, a lot of people say, oh, you know, you got to push the locals and it. Well, Hammerstone and Graves are locals. Yeah. You know, they've been with us from almost day one to where, you know, Hammerstone's a locker room leader. You know, he made a post after we won about what he's looking to see. And, you know, it's always good to hear. And like that, you know, having a guy, and that's why I always joke, like, hey, I hope you don't sign with WWE. You know, it's the biggest stage. But because of that, now Lacey and Cross can no longer ever work for us.
Right.
You know, when you're working for Impact and Ring of Honor and, you know, MLW, you know, we still have access to some of the best wrestlers in the world.
Yeah.
And Hammerstone is still probably 26, 27 years old. And, you know, he's got his best years still ahead of him, which is crazy because of how good he is right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I did think just for a brief moment that you might have pulled a trigger with Class cashing in right then and there and beating Hammerstone. I saw Class grab that briefcase and I'm like, you know what? Would the Arizona boys let their boy cash in tonight? And
well, you know, I think what happened was Class was busy out celebrating because after the beatdown Hammerstone got, you know, and you know, he's a young guy, Class. That's what happens when you don't stick around for the whole show. Yeah. He was so excited about winning the case, you know, he was already out partying that, you know, if he looks back and sees what happened, you know, you want to talk about missing out on a golden opportunity. You know, you were just laid out by bad dude Tito Escondido, yeah, and Coco Uso, and he could have just crawled in and it would have been all over.
Yeah, that's – I was – in my mind, I'm seeing that. I'm like, oh, my God, this could be interesting. But I'm happy that Class has that briefcase now. And you just – man, you just said, like – Escondido, Toko Uso, Juicy, dude. That, I mean, it's like I really do just scratch my head and go, you are gonna have to do 5-hour shows because there's so many good wrestlers now on the show. The talent is amazing, man.
You know, it's like you look at those four tag teams in the match that we had, and then the Unguided. So that's five teams.
Yeah.
That, you know, go find me a company anywhere that has five teams like that that are that good. And then you got the next group that we keep talking about, the Sky Highs and the Creature Features and even the Suavecitos, who are young and hungry and looking to get to that next level, where teams like Sky High, you know, in a lot of smaller companies, they're your tag team champions. And on FSW, you know, they're number six.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of companies don't even have six tag teams. Yep. You know what I mean? It's like who we have at number six is better than most companies' number one. So, you know, and we continue to add, and the Cash in the Case ladder match, Eli Everfly, I'll tell you what, man, every time you watch that dude, I'm like, I think somebody just killed this motherfucker.
Jesus.
You know what I mean? Like, the spot with him and Jay Vidal was insanity, you know, and having Gatson and Wise Guy, you know.
It's
incredible.
And on top of that, Jay Vidal and Jake did double duty after that brutal tag team match. Those two guys are in the ladder match, man.
No doubt about it. It was like, you know, we had five guys and we were thinking of going with five, and Jacob Austin Young pitched to me that he is you know, a two-time Cash in the Case winner. And he wanted to throw his hat in there. He's like, I'll work double duty.
So overall, Joe, with a new Nevada State champ, in Remy Marcel, also the Unguided as your new tag champs, and Hammerstone with the heavyweight title, what are you looking forward to, and when is the next big show that fans can look forward to? Possibly ordering another pay-per-view.
Well, yeah, that's definitely in the plans. The way we've set up the schedule, as we stated earlier, April 2nd, this Friday, the Future Stars of Women's Wrestling returns. Then it's WrestleMania week, and, you know, I saw a lot of our guys between the Unguided and Jay Vidal and Remy Marcel and Funny Bone and whoever else. You know, they're headed down to Florida for WrestleMania, you know, weekend, and between Wednesday and Thursday, you know, watching Cross win back the title on NXT, and then the 2 days of, you know, WrestleMania, we figure that's a good time to take a deep breath, relax a little bit, and we'll take the weekend off and watch some other wrestling that's going on. Then April 16th, we'll be back with Future Shock, which, you know, again, it's going to be a way to get some of the youngsters on. But then the big news is April 24th, we've announced Ground Zero. You know, it's a new beginning in FSW. As you stated, there is three new champions with the Unguided, Remy Marcel, and Hammerstone. Right now, they are all signed, sealed, and delivered, ready for that event. Ice Williams, you know, there's a lot to talk about with him. You know, he's officially turned to the dark side. And, you know, you kind of seen it over the last few months, and this just, you know, solidifies it. But, you know, you still got to give, you know, huge credit to Ice Williams. Between the production stuff that Mikey and Joey did for the buildup of that match, yeah, that and the Nevada State title stuff was some phenomenal work, you know. And Ice Williams, you know, seemed to be that guy that Funny Bone had his number. But you know what? He's the guy who thinks he's going to be the No Limits champion forever. So he's a guy who will do anything he can do to make sure he holds on to it. And, you know, he did with the, with some people calling Ice Camera Faction right now. So, you know, it's an interesting concept because, you know, when you look at that team, Fresco and Watson have been doing a lot of the tag work anyway.
Right.
And Watson's kind of been a double duty guy, but now Ice is the singles guy. And Braxton, who is main strong point, is being that antagonizing factor basically as a manager. But the thing is, he is much more of a wrestler than most managers.
Yeah.
So he can get in there and affect things. And now having, you know, Braxton more of relegated to being the manager guy and trying to make things happen, you know, that faction really now you have to take notice of.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of people seen Fresco and Watson and they've seen the improvements between both of them, over the last year. So now when we're talking tag teams, there we go. Now we got another one that you got to add in, which they kind of were around, but right. Now I see more success being that they are.
So Lights, Camera, Faction, does this add another dimension then for ICE to finally have guys who, can do the dirty work and keep that belt on him forever in his mind? Is this just a whole new ball game for ICE moving upwards with having the muscle now?
Well, it's definitely going to be interesting to see, because now, who's in line, who can get a title shot,
Right.
With the Bad Bitches, there was some issues with Parada, but, he seems to be back full time, and you got Eli Everfly in the mix to, I'd look forward to seeing that match. Yeah. But, a guy who could be the breakout guy, and everybody sees it, is Jay Vidal. And, right now, if there's going to be somebody who can not only go after Ice Williams, but defeat him, I would also say either member of the Unguided, but, they got way too much on their table to worry about, or single stuff. I know Matt Vandergriff, would love to have every title in FSW at the same time. You know what I mean? And, so would Damian Drake.
Yeah.
So, again, at Ground Zero on April 24th, the question is, who are the Unguided going to wrestle? Who's Hammerstone going to wrestle? What's up with Graves? Yeah. He just lost the title. Where does he go? Does he want a rematch? Is he going to go after somebody else? After what happened to Hammerstone, there's some issues that backstage that MK's army may have done some damage to Graves. Well, so that would put Tito Escondido, Toa Leona, and Juicy on Graves' radar.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, it's definitely going to be interesting to see. We haven't even put anything together. It's like we're trying to focus on the women's show, right. But we know where we got to go. Even Kenny King and Shogun, they had their issues after the match. And I know it's been a lot of built-in frustration with Shogun, and deservedly so. Whatever rhyme or reason that Kenny King was unable to make the shows, Shogun doesn't care the reasons. Shogun knows that Kenny King was his partner, and Kenny didn't have his back because he had other priorities.
Yeah.
And when you're tag team champions – and Shogun feels that his partner isn't putting them as a priority, of course he's going to have a problem with it. And at the end of the match, Shogun thought he was in control and might be able to put away the Unguided, and the tag was able to be made. Kenny was begging for it. And Shogun said, I was right there. I saw him, I got it. I got it. Basically, he's got it because you didn't have it before. Yeah. Hiro Lu had to come in and help him out when he was getting beat down by the Unguided. So it isn't one thing that has frustrated Shogun. It's been, the last few months. We had that match scheduled, then had to close down because of COVID stuff. So despite the fact it isn't all Kenny's fault, there was certain situations, then Kenny got COVID, and then they had to do the bubble in Ring of Honor, and there was so much going on that, unfortunately for Shogun, he had to pay the price. Because not only did he not get to defend the titles, there was a bunch of shows that he wasn't even on.
Yeah.
Just because there was no spot in a singles match for our tag team champion. So, you can go through, the entire card. A late addition was one of the best matches we saw with Sepha and Daivari.
Yeah.
Great respect from both guys. I got a text from Daivari after the show, and basically it said, three words. Sepha is awesome, is what, message to me. Because, he had to bail a little early.
Yeah.
So like, hey, thanks for everything. He's actually going to come in today and he wants to go, you know, look over the match and things like that. And he's even hoping Steph could come in just so he can help him out with some advice on what he saw after he looks back on the match and what he thinks. And that's what's so great about our company. It's like we have these young superstars, the Shoguns and Cephas and the Unguideds. And then we got these veterans like Kenny King and Sean Daivari. And now you call him a vet too, a guy like Hammerstone, that the talent, you know, in some cases, the talent's all the bring-in guys. And in some cases, the talent is just the young local guys. Like, our talent pool, you know, I rave about it day in and day out. But you really got to see it at Day of Reckoning because there was such a potpourri of talent. You saw a young guy like Jordan Cruz, and you see a young guy like Class, and you see a guy like Ice Williams go toe-to-toe with Funny Bone in Funny Bone's realm in a no-holds-barred match, and Ice going through doors and Funny Bone through thumbtacks. You know, I highly recommend, you know, that match alone. Yeah. You know, despite the fact it went 25 minutes, there was never a dull moment in that match.
Yeah, absolutely. you know, as we start coming out of the regulations, I guess last night there was a big announcement, and how will this affect you going forward?
Well, now it is 100% legal for contact sports to continue. Are we a contact sport? No. But do a lot of people consider us a contact sport because of such the physical nature? It's hard to say we're ballet when guys are picking guys up and slamming them down and doing all this other stuff. So now that gray area is far less of a gray area.
Right.
So whatever you want categorize us as, we should be fine. The only, the last thing we need is, you know, for them to do the 6 foot distance, right. You know, because generally in a wrestling, we have the guardrails and they're about 6 feet away, you know, to give people room. The problem was a lot of the room wasn't able to be utilized. Right. Not only was there no seating, there was also no room. So, you know, we're hoping in the next month or so, you know, that's the first step, you know, allowing all of that to happen. And now the next step is let's get back to at least the 6 foot distance. The CDC was claiming that 3 feet were okay for the kids. And if the numbers keep going, they have no choice but to allow things. I went into Sunset Station yesterday for the first time in 9 months, and they didn't have a guy there checking your temperature.
Right.
So now it's just walk on in.
Yeah, and speaking of walking on in, I think we're almost connected to... There he is.
There he is.
There
he is. He just finished hanging up his clothes. He's ready to go.
No problem.
There you go.
How the hell are you?
Good. Haven't seen you in a long time, but we're looking forward to seeing you real
Absolutely.
Soon.
I'm looking forward to coming down there and seeing all my buddies. Seeing, I know Brian lives out there now. I was thinking he might come by.
Hang Who's on. That?
Mr. Cage.
Oh, yeah.
He lives in Vegas now.
You got Jeff Cobb, you got Willie Mack, you got so many dudes.
You got all the talent to pull from, don't you?
Hey, they all want to work at FSW. You know how it is. They had a
yeah.
You know, and they hated California.
You got Hammerstone there holding the belt, you know.
Who doesn't want
to go to battle with him, you know.
Well, since we have you on, we can let everybody know that at Ground Zero, which is our next big event on April 24th, you will finally be making your FSW debut, and we're really looking forward to it.
Oh, it's going to be great. You know, it's been over a year in the making now, let's say, you know, thanks to the whole situation going on in the world today. Kind of put the brakes on a lot of projects, but I think it's back to pedal to the metal for a lot of people now.
Yeah, you know, they've opened up even more some regulations allowing the contact sports and things like that as of yesterday. So now there's no more gray areas and stuff. And for those who don't know, Brian was booked to be in the Mecca Grand, uh, the tournament, and he was going to wrestle Willie Mack. But on the same show, Douglas James got fucked up in Mexico. Brian got sick, and I remember him calling me like an hour and a half before the flight. And yeah. It's like, oh,
I feel like shit. Well, he was on that Mexico show with me, I think, too.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, my God, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Because Matt just canceled. And he was like, well, you know, I'll come if you want. What do you want me to do? I'm like, dude, if you don't feel good, whatever. Yeah,
it was definitely a very weird time in the world. And I think what had happened is I just got sick in Mexico. I got like a cold or something, a head cold or a flu there. Or it was when I was in the Dominican. I'd been in the Dominican with my girlfriend at the time. And then went to Mexico. And then I was going to go home for 7 hours and then go to Vegas. And just, I guess, with all that traveling, and it was like a rainy, cold day in Tijuana. So maybe a leaky roof or something got me a cold. But it was unfortunate. And I just couldn't see myself getting on a plane with all the news and everything. I didn't want to freak anybody out, you know.
You know, Brian, speaking of that, what was your reaction to the overreaction that the internet had about, you know, everything that was going on right around that time with you? You know, I know that there was a lot of just speculation on, you know, did you have coronavirus, or, you know, was Brian faking something, or, you know, it was just very strange. How do you deal with all that kind of negativity that's out there, being that you do have such a high profile name in the business?
Yeah, I mean, I've always, ever since I've started, I've always had high expectations, and people's, you know, the amount of moral superiority that goes on Twitter is unreal. You know, everybody thinks that they're on some high horse, and half the people don't even have a profile picture, and they're not even verified or linked to their own accounts. So in my opinion, if you want to have a voice, and if you want to go on Twitter and talk shit, then you should have your face out there. You should be verified. You know, they ought to verify everybody.
Yeah.
And make sure there aren't any trolls and bots. Because it's like half of these people doing these arguments and claiming this, that, and the other. It's like, what do they know? But no, at the end of the day, it's like, you know, my conscience was clear. I didn't think I had, there was no testing for this at the time. This was right. The first week of the pandemic. This was the very first show. And it, like, that was under the umbrella of a pandemic. And the show went on. And I'm sure a bunch of guys didn't get sick. Like,
right.
You know, just like people are, you know, shows are happening right now at the tail end of it. You know, it was just at the beginning of it, and now we're at the tail end of it. And I think both of those times were relatively low risk. You know, I know a lot of people called off the show, like myself, just because of that scare, that risk of, oh no, you know, like
yeah.
This impending doom, because we didn't know what was going on then.
Right.
But I think as time has gone on, we've learned about this virus. There's been plenty of testing going around. Hell, there's been vaccines administered. So at this point, you know, I haven't had any physical, you know, issues running into it. And if I did, I didn't notice. I must have shrugged it off. But
right.
But at this point, you know, the economies are opening back up, shows are opening back up, and people are a lot more transparent. But at the time, I don't think I had it. But at the time, I didn't know. Like
right.
Shit, I could have had, you know. But.
You know,
yeah, people are gonna grasp at straws, and they're gonna try to, you know, it's like, oh, you know, Charlotte, and it's like they're talking shit about Charlotte.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I had COVID. It's like people need to realize that privacy is something sacred, right? And it's becoming a thing of the past. Everybody wants to know everybody's business, you know.
Yeah.
We used to call that back in
my day. Yeah, they're gonna say it's non-existent.
Dirty laundry. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no more privacy anymore. It used to be that was polite, was to be private about things, you know, and to not. But now there's no more decency in this world, you know.
So, Joe, let me ask you, when did you become aware that Brian had started wrestling, and how did you, you know, look at Brian at that point to start thinking, hey, this is a guy I'd like to see here in Vegas on some of the shows?
Well, I remember a while back, and I think I was talking at the time to, you know, we had heard about it, you know, Brian Pillman Jr. Then I guess he trained a little with Sammy Callahan. Is that correct?
Yeah. A little being okay. the word, but yes.
Yeah. And, you know, I was talking with Sammy, and he was at that time, I guess Brian was, you know, training at the school a little bit. But the first time I ever met him, which is the only time I ever met him, when Teddy Hart and all those guys were at the show at the Nerd Bar.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, when I
that
walked.
Was my, that was my real, that was my real FSW, baby.
Yeah. So I introduced myself, and Brian talked to me like he knew exactly who I was. And he's like, oh, you know, heard great things and love to work for you. And that was a locker room filled with guys that I, you know, personally know well. And then there was Jacob Fatu, and then, you know, and
Marcy, yeah.
And there was a lot of guys that I knew anyway. So it's like through MLW at the time, I guess with Hammerstone, maybe those conversations were had. And, you know, he was a guy we definitely had on the radar of, you know, who we wanted to bring in. We're always looking to bring in new, fresh faces. And, you know, as young as Brian is, it's like he's got, you know, he immediately had the name value, but we've seen guys whose fathers were famous and kind of walked into the business and really shit the bed and didn't put in the effort. And as, you know, I watched Brian's career, you know, he seemed to continually improve. And that means he's a, his work ethic is strong. He wants to make it in this business because he knows the name can only take him so far. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, it might get your foot in the door, but it's not keeping it in the door. And, you know, here's a guy who works at MLW, and AEW likes him so much, they had to make an agreement. And now, Brian, you can see him basically every week on AEW television. In the beginning, it was just on Dark, and now it's on the main shows. Yeah. So there's reasons for that. You know, people don't go to fight for somebody just because his dad was a great wrestler 25 years ago.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, Brian, looking at the way that, like Joe just said, that you're on AEW now on a very regular basis on Dynamite. What I was impressed, like this past week, you had that backstage, very brief segment with Christian. And there was just something really cool when you're watching and listening to Christian, and I forgot exactly what he said, but I could see you put your hand on the back of your tagged partner. And it was just like, that was the small shit that I think that you do that is fucking awesome because you were engaged in the moment. A lot of times guys will just stand there and yeah, okay, we know Christian's cutting whatever he needs to cut and we're basically background. You were engaged, and I love that about you. What is it about, I guess, the philosophy that you have of being a performer that you find yourself just doing those natural little things that make you stand out than, you know, the next guy?
I think when I was first getting into wrestling, there was a large period where I was waiting, and I was waiting to go to Lance Storm's school. And so I was just going down to OVW on like literally Sunday, like maybe once a week when I could, because, you know, I still had a job and things like that. So I was just getting ready to go up to Lance's. And I was just going down to Rip Rogers training, and I didn't really get the whole introductory course. You know, I wasn't really taught how to call a match or do anything, but he went in there, he let me do some drills, he let me take some bumps. But one thing that Rip always forced us to do was promos. You know, that was a huge part of Rip Rogers' class. It would make you go in there and do promos and stuff. So before I even got to really do a move or have a match or do anything, I just had a lot of promo practice. And just being, you know, driving an hour and a half down to Louisville every Sunday, it's like if that was the one thing I got to do, like I wasn't really allowed to go have a match, I wasn't allowed to do anything. If that was the one thing I got to do, to like pop the boys and to like get over with them and show them how much I care, like it was that I was going to work on just promos and talking and stuff. And two, I think I've always sort of aspired to that. I really like the storytelling aspect of promos. I really like the natural ones. I don't like overly scripted things. You know, I like emotional, organic things. And I think in even going to MLW, there was some organic chemistry with Teddy and Davey Boy.
Yeah.
Where I could just, you know, be myself and Teddy would start talking a bunch of shit and I would just stand around and I'd look at him and I'd be like, you know, yeah, like we're the shit, you know, we're the coolest dudes here. And it was easy to not think about lines or talking and stuff. And that creative freedom continued on at AEW work at where AEW lets the talent be themselves too. Yeah. So I've always just felt comfortable in front of a camera. And also in high school, we did a lot of, we did a Friday, every Friday when school let out, before school would let out, there'd be like a news, you know, this week at school, you know, and we would do funny skits and we would do just dumb stuff that before like people got famous on YouTube and posted this shit, we like filmed it like with these old school cameras and like posted it on our, if we had saved all this shit on YouTube, it'd be money, but we just did a bunch of funny stuff and it was all organic, unscripted stuff. So I think my whole life I've sort of gravitated towards that performance, you know, aspect of wrestling. And when the camera's rolling, I just breathe and I just organic about it. You know, I try not to remember things and I just treat it like it's real.
Yeah.
You know, wrestling is a very real part of my life because it's had a real effect on my life. You know, my dad was who he was, and that ended up meaning that my childhood went the way it did, for better or for worse, and I got to where I am today because of wrestling. So if I'm in front of the camera, the last thing I'm going to do is try and act or be fake or be something that I'm not. All I got to do is be Brian Pillman Jr. You know, yeah. There's really no gimmick to it. I don't have a specific gimmick that I work. Even if you look at the Varsity Blondes, it's like, that's who we are. You know, Griff and I played football at a high level in high school and I went on to play college lacrosse. So like the whole aspect of camaraderie and being a jock, but also getting good grades, because you got to get good grades if you want to play on the starting team. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, just being a top of the line athlete, a top of the line student, and just being excellent at the top of your class, being the elite of anything, is sort of kind of what I live by. A character, I'm not like coming up with scripts or promos, you know. You put the camera in front of me, I'm just going to be burning.
Joe, first off, is Brian going to be the first ex-lacrosse player that FSW is going to see?
I heard Maserati played lacrosse for a while, but other than that, I don't really know anybody who has played lacrosse. Because you know what? The truth of the matter is, I guess a lot of people played lacrosse. When I grew up in high school, I played baseball. I hated lacrosse. So in most situations, lacrosse didn't have, you know, the way college basketball, right, and college football. You know, college baseball isn't that big a deal, except when you get to the pros. Right. But college lacrosse doesn't have this big following, and most people don't know, oh, hey, yeah, that guy played lacrosse in high school. Yeah. That guy played lacrosse in college. It's kind of like that little, you know, under-the-radar sport.
Yeah, right.
That,
yeah.
High school. Like wrestling, you know, I remember having like a lacrosse stick.
Well, see, when I was in high school, it was only a club. It wasn't even an official varsity sport. But by the time I became a senior, we officially had our high school official uniform and stuff.
Wow.
When I was first started, it was like a Northern Kentucky club. Like, it was a bunch of different high schools conglomerated into one, but it's quickly developed. It quickly caught on. And I was a part of that. I was one of the people that sort of led the way and spreading the word about lacrosse in my community, right? So
yeah.
I was the first team captain there. And I thought, you know what? There's a lot of momentum and excitement behind this sport. Why don't I go try in college? And then when I got to college, I think, the school got a little more demanding. And then the lacrosse aspect itself, the actual sport of it, was a little more finesse, you know, than I was used to just running through people in high school, you know. And it was a little more like soccer in that regard, a little bit more mental and finesse than I was used to. So I kind of fell out of it, but I still have a whole lot of respect for the sport. I still have all my skills and abilities that I can do. I can throw left-handed, right-handed behind the back. And Hook at AEW, Taz's son, is actually a former Division I college lacrosse player.
Wow.
So he's quite the impressive athlete himself, you know. So,
wow. So, Joe, what do you when you look at Brian and what he's been able to accomplish so far, what do you think the strongest aspects that you see in what Brian has been doing?
Well, again, you know, talking about that work ethic, it's like Brian, you know, now, you know, we're looking forward to him being in FSW, working guys like Hammerstone. And here's a guy that he's going to walk in because of what he's already accomplished, and he doesn't have to work himself through the roster. You know, he's a guy that we can put in with just about anybody. You know, when I was talking with him, and, you know, there's always those guys you're going to bring in for a show, you know, here and there, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you know, with Brian, the conversations, you know, with him make him a guy that you want to bring in more than once. Right. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, I always talk about certain guys that are my all-time favorite guys. And Matt Hardy's my all-time favorite guy. And Lance Hoyt's one of the best people I've ever met in my life.
Good man.
And Brian Cage, you know, Cage has done great things for us. You know, he'll tell you, to anybody who knows, that Joe is his favorite promoter, and he's also the guy that probably paid him the least. And, you know, I treated him as good as I could. When I had other opportunities, I got him paid at other shows when we were doing stuff in Phoenix.
Yeah.
I try to put as many good guys on a show as I can, but also try to keep things in budget. So when guys work for me, you know they're going to work for less, but they're also going to get the opportunities. Like a guy like Hammerstone, when he first came in, well, he got to work Sammy Callahan, and he got to work Moose, and he got to work John Morrison, you know, in his growth. It's the same thing with Cross getting to work Chris Masters and Timothy Thatcher. It's like those guys, Chris Bay, you know, he got fed, you know, Phoenix, and he worked some of the, you know, some of the biggest stars, you know, in wrestling. And a guy like Brian, I'm hoping that this isn't just a one-time thing. You know, we work stuff out. He's going to be doing a card signing with Scott Hosey at the mall earlier in the day. And it's like, you know, I try to take care of people as much as possible. I remember when we were supposed to have him, I was trying to get him work at the United Wrestling show that Marquez was running because it was like 2 days later. And you know, Brian was doing AEW Dark at the time. And it's like, I try to have people around me that have, you know, good attitudes. People say good things about them. You know, there's not many guys that hang around in our locker room on, you know, multiple occasions that are assholes. You know what I mean? And that's what makes our locker room so good, that there's so much talent there. And of course, everybody's striving to be the best. But everybody's rooting for good things to happen, because as good as we're doing, we're not content. We want to be the best company. You know, is GCW where they're at? I think we're better than them. So what do we got to do to get to that next level? We're always striving better. And if we could bring in a guy like Brian, who most people have nothing but great things to say about, and that's a guy I want to bring in. Simon Gotch is another guy who Brian works with a lot. And Gotch came from NorCal, and Mike Modest, our first trainer, actually trained Gotch. And that NorCal crew buried him, that before I even used him, I had a thought in my mind of how he was. And then I met him, and I'm like, wow, this is like the coolest motherfucker I've ever met. Like, I love Simon Gotch.
Yeah.
And it's, but he somehow had a bad reputation, and I'm never going to go on that. Same thing with Teddy Hart. You know, he's had a lot of ups and downs, but he always did great business for us. Can't say he ever did anything bad in FSW. You know, he always gave forth. He was a great teacher in the seminars. And unfortunately, he's had a lot of issues in his personal life. But when he was in the ring and he was at our place, you know, he was as good as anybody there. And, you know, with Brian, like I said, hopefully this is, you know, the start of, you know, a long-term relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, you know, getting to come in there and knowing all the good talent there, it's like, I'm only going to get better and I'm only going to elevate, you know, the product as much as I can. You know, coming from AEW, we get access to, you know, hell, I mean, you look at who I've been in the ring with these past couple months, you know, the FTR, it's like, they're the best tag team in the world. You know, I can't even go out there and try not to learn something without learning something or without up in my game. So if there's anything I can bring from that level and elevate, you know, the crew at FSW, that's exactly what I'm all about, you know, and I can get in there and I can hang with anybody. And if Hammerstone's got a belt around his waist and he needs a challenger, then, you know, send him my way.
You know, speaking of that, like Joe mentioned the locker room, and you just mentioned AEW. How important is it for you that there are so many people in AEW that you've known, you know, since you started training and wrestling, you know, a handful of years ago now? Does that make it more of a comfortable atmosphere to walk in when you really know the people that you're working with?
You know, it's funny because some of the people in the locker room I've known since I was 4 and 5 years old, you know, and they took part in the Pillman Memorial shows and stuff. Right. So it, you know, and Christian, who just came in and did the segment with us, and Braxton Sutter, you know, being a guy that worked those shows back in the day, a lot of the big names were a part of that back then.
Yeah.
And so I do feel very comfortable. It does feel like a family at AEW. You know?
Joe, you know, Hammerstone just got mentioned. He's got a title around his waist, and seems like Brian might have a little desire to wrestle a guy like Hammerstone, maybe win some gold here in FSW. Would it be a great thing for you to maybe have an FSW championship belt just kind of sitting in the background of a locker room shot in AEW?
Well, we had it at Impact with Chris Bay, so it would be nice to, you know, spread our wings everywhere. It's like when we look at our locker rooms of the major companies, if you go to Impact, there's 20 guys who, you know, when I say work for FSW, I'm not talking about guys who had one match. I'm talking about guys who've been there multiple times, you know. In AEW, Brian Cage, you know, beat Matt Hardy in a TLC match after Matt Hardy was my champion for like 9 months in FSW. And Brian Cage started with me in, I believe, 2009, the very first show we did at the Silver Nugget. Wow. Him and Brandon Gaston had at the time what was the 2009 match of the year. So Brian is a guy who had, he had recently came off developmental back in like 2009. And it took him a very, very long time. Sean Ricker, LA Knight, whatever you want to call him, Eli Drake. You know, he's a guy who started with us in 2010. He was Cage's tag team partner. And those guys have been with me, you know, up until they can no longer be with me. You know, Cage was a guy. Cage, actually, I always tell the story when he hit me up about working. He drove in from Fresno for $75. Wow. Well, he's a lot more than $75 now, so, you know. But he had worked for, you know, limited money. There was times it was like, you know, Allegiant Airlines, and he was like, hey, can you fly me in from Fresno? And the flights were like $50, you know what I mean? And it was like, hey, okay, to bring the guy in. And then when the ball started rolling, you know, we always talk about the legacies of FSW, and it's like the champions all in a row were Sean Ricker, who's from Cincinnati, you know, well, Brian Cage, Cross, Chris Bay, and Hammerstone. So those five guys were not heard of nationally when we had them as our champions. and they've gone on to bigger and better things. And now these guys, they're not only just, they're not on the shows, they're stars of the shows.
Right.
So, you know, and that's what we want to continue to build, you know.
It sounds like you got yourself a pretty good show there, you know. You keep,
yeah,
you keep
absolutely.
All these future stars here.
And we got some young talent. There's a young Samoan kid, Hiro Lu. Awesome, but he's still got a ways to go. That, you know, you'd be a great match for him. They taped something at our facility, and they were looking for guys, and EC3 was working. So, you know, I recommended that they give, you know, Hiro the match with EC3. And after I talked to EC3, and he was like, yeah, this guy's, you know, pretty good. Sean Daivari, another guy who's in Vegas, he trains with us. He helps train. Fucking awesome dude. Like,
yeah,
worked Sefa Fatu Saturday, had a great match. And he even hit me up about Hiro, like, hey, who's this young kid? He looks like he's got a lot of potential. So guys like that are great matches for Brian to come in. So it's like, will he work Hammerstone? Yeah, I'm pretty sure he will. Will it be on the 24th? It could be. You know, we're still finalizing everything. But I did make sure Hammerstone was available April 24th. I said, hey, I got Pillman coming in. And he said, sure, I'd like to whoop his ass again. So.
And yeah, I mean, I got a lot of history with Alex at MLW, and having fought him for the national open weight, the inaugural match, you know, never before had that belt been held. And it was a very, very nice belt, a good indicator of skill within that league, because, you know, it was an open weight title. It was available to anybody, any challengers. I think Hammerstone had quite a weight advantage on me at the time. You know, I was only about 200 pounds. I think he was pulling 230. And I think now the weights have kind of evened out a little bit. I think he's starting to lean out and I'm starting to bulk up. So we might be a little more even in terms of leverage and in terms of skill, as well as I've accelerated my craft. And he's always been, you know, as long as I've known him, he's been at the top of his game, and he's only going to continue to get better. But yeah, at the same time, I think we're looking at a matchup that could go either way. I've been looking at a matchup that I'm very confident in. But yeah, maybe he needs more time. Maybe he shows up April 24th and sees what I'm doing and tries to take a look or tries to intervene in a match I'm having or something. That's yet to be seen. But I can tell you that he's not, you know, he's not just sitting at home drinking mimosas. You know what I mean? I think he's doing his research. I think he's in the gym expecting there to be a fight. You know, I don't think he thinks it's going to be a walk in the park. You know.
Speaking of training and in the gym, how has it been for you, being that you did start off, you know, right around, you know, 200 pounds? And you've definitely increased your physique. Has it been beneficial for your style? And have you been able to learn from some of the guys on what you should be focusing on to basically prepare your body for not only the look, but the wear and tear as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I realized, you know, so as I started coming into my own, that I wasn't going to be, you know, the next Ray Phoenix, you know, I wasn't going to be the best flyer in the world. I sort of tried to limit those capacities, and I started working a lot on my striking, and then eventually on my mat wrestling, been doing some jiu-jitsu and some different things. But yeah, I think that I'm a guy that I carry my weight well. I think I've got good leverage. I've got good power. That is just was waiting to be unlocked. You know, I was trying to be flying Brian for too long. I think it's time to be flying Brian Steiner, you know, coming in there, suplexing some fools, you know. But also, I really appreciate some of the different things that my trainer did, you know, the half crab and the super kick. So there's a lot that I have to work with now. I tried to do a lot early on, and I kind of found out what worked for me, right?
Yeah.
So very physical style that I'd like to implement at FSW. And I think you'll see a different side of me as we go to challenge that for that belt. But yeah, I think that's all I got to say for today. I think I'm excited to see what the future holds, my friends.
Joe, any final thoughts before we let Brian wrap up?
Well, yeah, you know, now that I'm hearing about the jiu-jitsu and the mat wrestling, you know, we have a show called Natural Born Killers, which is similar to Bloodsport. Add another name. We got, you know, we got Gotch on that show. We had Severin. We had Frank Mir. You know, we brought in some MVP, did the last one we did, Stefan Bonner, who lives out here. You know, we did it with Cross, and that's when Cross actually fought Moxley in our arena a couple years ago. So, you know, there might be another name that, you know, we're looking for some talent for that show. You know, like I found out, like TJ Perkins was like, oh, he might get signed. You know, Bellator's offering me a contract. And, you know, a great match with Douglas James, Tom Lawler, of course, that we use. So maybe
it's definitely a style that that I've been dipping my toes in a lot more lately. It's something I'm very interested in. It's definitely still a work in progress, but I think every martial art, everything can sort of bleed into professional wrestling and can be utilized as a weapon within that ring. So.
Well, Brian,
there you have it. We may have another signing to Natural Born Killers 3.
Well, Brian, I thank you for joining us. You know, I know that once you make your debut at FSW, one of the things you're going to love is the fact that the fans are some of the best fans in this country, man. And they'll embrace you either, you know, whether it be to love you or to hate you. You know, you're going to...
Or to buy your merchandise.
Yeah.
Go buy your merch.
Yeah, we're excited to have you here, brother. And just can't wait to see what good stuff is to come, man.
Oh, yeah. Thank you guys for having me. It's been great.
So we just heard from Brian Pillman Jr. And it's just very exciting to know that someone who is as young as he is... who is still learning himself, but is a very positive person. Are you, when you look at someone's character and you know that, you know, sometimes you hear bad things, sometimes you hear good things, as you were talking about Simon Gotch like that, is it your own eyes in the end that allows you to say, you know what, I'm willing to take the chance that this person will fit into our locker room?
Well, when it comes to name guys, you know, that's the ones that you have to be tricky with, you know, and you can see how they react to you when they don't really know who you are. They're a big name guy. And for example, the first big name guy I ever had a deal with was John Morrison. And, you know, John was super nice, humble, you know, explained to me what he was going to do, what he was capable of doing, and what he didn't want to do. And, you know, but he was also a guy that if I sent a message to, he actually responded very quickly. Hey, I need a promo. And sometimes these bigger guys, you got to hit them up 10 times. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, hey, we're paying you good money to be on the show. Can you help promote it? You know? And John's a guy who would go out of his way. As I said, when Matt Hardy won the FSW Heavyweight Championship, you would swear he just beat the Dudleys and Edge and Christian in the TLC match at WrestleMania, the way he put over winning the FSW Championship.
Right.
You know, Lance Hoyt, as I said, another guy who, no matter what you asked of him, super nicest guy in the world, helping out in the back, talking to the young guys. You know, those are the people you want to have around. You know, initially a guy like Disco was kind of the first guy locally who was around. And Disco's a guy that, super dude, but if he doesn't know you, he's not, hey, I'm Disco, I'm Glenn, hey, whoa. No, he doesn't say a lot.
Right.
You know, when he gets to know you, he opens up a lot more. As crazy as, you know, you see and you would think of the Disco Inferno character, you know, Disco is way quieter, you know, in person. You know, if you ask Clutch and Sugar Brown who their favorite trainer was ever in FSW, they'll tell you it was Disco. And Disco keyed on certain things like striking and selling. That's the biggest issues he has. Punches that look like shit, and the fact you get hit with a big move and you don't sell it. Or you sell it for a second and you pop right back up.
Right.
And the character guys is what's made FSW as popular as it is. You know, we had a great reputation in NorCal. Why was that? Because the Reno scum would tell everybody, oh, yeah, FSW's great. FSW's great. Well, it's easy to say FSW's great when you're working for $200-$300. But when you're working for what they were working for, there has to be a lot more, because it isn't they just came to Vegas because they were making a shit ton of money. Right. They weren't making a shit ton of money. They did it because of the crowd, of the competition, knowing Joe gives them London and Kendrick, knows that I give them the Young Bucks. I give them Ricochet and Rich Swann. So they are telling everybody how great it is. As I said with Cage, we joke about it, but hey, what can you do? Hey, I can do this. Hey, I can do that. It's like, oh, I'm getting this now. And it's like, he'll settle for less because he likes Joe. Now his settling price is a lot higher than it was before, but you know, we still hope to have Brian Cage, you know, in some capacity, you know, extremely soon. You know, we got our Wall of Fame that we abruptly had to add Lacey Ryan. And we actually have on hold the Brian Cage and Hammerstone ones. You know, and then there's a rumor, as somebody I talked to on Saturday, you know, pointed to the wall and made it seem like he should be getting one soon too. So, you know, keep updated on that. And like I said, you know, a guy like Gotch, you know, good worker. There's a lot of good workers.
Yeah.
But he stands out because I like talking to him. He'll talk to you for 3 hours about current events, wrestling of the present, wrestling of the past.
Yeah.
Any topic you want to talk to, he's, you know, extremely informative on things. You know, he's... It's funny how new people kind of meet him. He came in last month for something that somebody else was taping, and people who had met him before, oh man, I really like that Simon Gotch. And it's like everybody that I've seen who met him have talked about how awesome he is. That's why it's crazy to me how in some spaces he has such a bad reputation.
Yeah.
You know, and like I said, when you see these guys working over and over, when we do have the Meccas and we do have these bigger shows, like Sami Callihan had always done good business with us. Moose is another guy. Awesome. You know, and you know, he hits me up. Hey bro, when are you running something big? You know, I'll come back to Vegas, you know, and he's a normal guy. In some situations, some people take that fame to another level and kind of talk down to people.
Right.
Even though I'm the boss and I'm the promoter, you know, I'm the star, you're bringing me in. I really like the guys, and that's why I continue the ones who don't act like they're the stars. They're not prima donnas. They don't ask for everything. You know, they're willing to help try to grow what you're doing. And, you know, you can never be thankful enough. I've said it a million times about Matt Hardy. You know, here's a guy, you know, because of the pandemic, we were going to be the only show that had him before his transition from WWE into AEW.
Right.
Like, that was a big fucking deal. And why was he going to do it? Because he likes Joe. He did good business with Joe. But most importantly, he made money with Joe.
Yeah.
Now, what I didn't pay him for this, I got him with the card signing. I got him doing the seminar. I got him. So there was always a way, hey, we did a dinner at Casa de Amor, you know, where Matt sat there for 4 hours and Rebbe was like, Jesus Christ, when is this over? And it's like, never he wants it to be. And it's like, can you tell him to wrap it up? I'm like, you're his wife. You tell him to wrap it up. You know, I'm not going to. And the same thing at the seminar. Like, he does the seminar and 4 hours into it, you know, he's sitting there taking any questions from people. And he's a guy who is giving back to the business.
Yeah.
So him, AEW, even though he's not wrestling as much right now. And unfortunately, because of the pandemic, his broken gimmick character is really meant for the live audience.
Yeah.
So when they're not there, it doesn't give him the success. But, you know, I'm pretty sure he's back there helping out anybody who's willing to get anything. You know, I'm pretty sure a guy like Jungle Boy is soaking up anything that a Matt Hardy has to say. Private Party. You know, they're a team. They kind of great young team, but there's a lot of great young teams. They just happen to be benefited by being in AEW and now getting to be in the ears of the Young Bucks and Matt Hardy and, you know, Lance Hoyt. You know, I remember years ago when we did a Survival of the Fittest match and Will Hobbs was part of Cold Cold World in the match with Lance Hoyt. And I remember after the match, and Will was pretty good, but he was green.
Right.
And Lance went up to them and was like, hey, here's my number. You know, any questions, give me a call, whatever it is, you know. And he was willing to help these guys that he had never met before. You know, he saw some potential in him. You know, I'm wondering if them two ever talked about, hey, remember when I met you at FSW Vegas? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And those are the kind of guys that really, really help, you know, and they're very fortunate that they have that experience. And that's kind of similar to what we're doing when we have, you know, a Kenny King and a Sean Daivari and a Sin Bodhi and a D'Lo Brown hanging around. You know, and on some small occasions of Jake the Snake, you know, but then you mixed in, like I say, the Codys and the Remy's and the Hammerstones and the Graves. And, you know, nobody's going to fuck around when Graves is there. You know what I mean? You know, just the thought.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. You know, as we kind of wrap up here, and I know that, on April 1st, we have a little baseball season starting up here. What do you think about your Mets' chances this year? And how happy are you to have Lindor on the team now?
Well, it was a great move, obviously. And, you know, I've been a Mets fan since, you know, Tom Seaver, my favorite, you know, player of all times.
Yeah.
Got to meet him once. He was very nice. And, you know, they should have been champs way more times in the 80s than they were.
Yeah.
It all comes down to, you know, the pitching. You know, it's – I always thought Syndergaard was better than DeGrom, but obviously I was mistaken on that, and Syndergaard's been hurt. Yeah. But with the pitching staff, you know, they got to be healthy. You know, they've had some issues, you know, in the outfield and center field and – the Timo Perez's and whatever, who 220 hitters, but you know, guys not panning out. But if you look at that team, it's a monster team. And if their pitching just holds up, there's no reason why, you know, let alone win the division, they can win it all. You know, despite the fact I'm a Met guy, true and true, moving to Vegas really makes you a Yankee fan too, because you're from New York. So you're always rooting for New York. You know, back in the day, I despised the Mets, the Yankees so much that I was a Boston Red Sox fan, you know, growing up. And I remember, you know, I had a paper route, and I remember the Yankees and the Red Sox playing that one-game playoff back in the day.
Bucky and, fucking Dent, huh?
Yeah. You know, Fred Lynn, center fielder for the Red Sox at the time, I would have to say, I guess position player, my favorite of all times. Like, that guy's career got ended because he ran into so many fucking walls making unbelievable catches that it ended up ruining his career.
Yeah.
But when he was on, he was phenomenal. Only guy ever to hit a grand slam in an All-Star game.
I was just going to say that, man.
I know my Freddie Lynn, you know, I think he had like 8 RBIs in a playoff game when he played with the Angels.
Yeah.
You know. I always liked him way better than Jim Rice, but Jim Rice ended up being better, obviously.
Well, and Jim Rice had a little more longevity at a higher
consistency. Yeah, no doubt.
You know, 1986.
I'm looking forward to baseball. It's my favorite sport to bet.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I like to lay the run lines in some occasions, so it brings the odds down. So you can bet a $10 parlay, five teams, and you can still win $500.
Yeah.
In football, you can win, you know, 200, and it's got to cover the spread. In baseball, you just got to win the game, you know. So that's why I'm a huge fan of betting baseball. I'm looking forward to it. I made a handful of bets for the March Madness. And can't win on betting basketball. You know, yeah. It's tough enough in football. That's why I only bet football. So, you know, if we want to do the Joe DeFalco sports byline podcast, I'm for that too.
We might have to look into that because now I'm intrigued because of
I am a fountain of information.
Yeah, maybe we'll have to the FSW network might have a 15-minute bet show every week. That'd be interesting.
We'll call it I already got the name, 1-800 Joe Wins. No.
Well, yeah, we'll have to think about that and work on getting that together for everyone. Any final thoughts going into the women's show on the 2nd?
Well, you know, we are excited. You know, we maneuvered everything around. We're able to do shows, not trying to, like, you know, sneak things in and doing stuff. But, you know, you're trying to do what you got to do. And right now, you know, we need to build the momentum that we had created over the last couple of years that has came to a standstill, and it was disappointing. So now, you know, back to that regular schedule, taking a week off here or there, but moving forward, you know, we're looking for at least 3 shows a month. Yeah. And, you know, hopefully one is a big one. You know, in May, we got 2 back to back. May 8th, we're going to do a big show, but then May 14th, we're going to do a show before GCW, Game Changer Wrestling. So we're in talks with them about using some talent that's going to be here. So on that Friday, May 14th, I don't want to just step on toes. So we've come up with the idea for a name the day before Game Changer Wrestling called Changing the Game. But I don't want him to look at it as disrespectful. So I was like, hey, you know, since, you know, we kind of work together, they're using our ring, they're using Joey and the production crew. So we kind of have a working relationship. You know, it'd be nice that, you know, if they have their main event lined up, then maybe there's a confrontation. You know, I know Chris Bay is on their show the 15th. So it'd be nice for Chris Bay to maybe, you know, have a discussion, a nice sit down interview with his opponent at GCW on that Saturday.
That sounds like it sounds absolutely fabulous.
Right. And those opportunities are afforded to us because of that. And, you know, we got the women's show and Maserati, she's going to defend against Katarina. So, you know, here's his Maz's chance to, you know, other than Lacey Ryan, really step up with somebody who has been a big time talent in professional wrestling for many years, you know, not 2 or 3, you know, we're talking 12, 15 years. And, you know, she still looks great. And, you know, another one, very easy to deal with, very, very nice to conversate with, and, you know, knows how to do business. So, you know, MK Bandit and FSW present the Future Stars of Women's Wrestling. And MK, you know, he's coming off a little high. You know, the MK Army was formed, and he got a little revenge on Hammerstone for laying him out last month.
That's it's a shame that that Hammerstone can't show up at this event and destroy MK's event as revenge.
Yeah, but Hammerstone's a lot nicer now when he beat up Taya. So,
Everyone listening, thank you again. Please, if you haven't subscribed to the network, now's a great time to do it because you get a great discount, especially if you do multiple months or a full year. And again, you'll have access for a great rate on the pay-per-views when pay-per-views do come up. If you're not subscribed to the network, again, Future Stars Wrestling can be found on Fight TV. So, you know, keep that in mind as well.
And we will be this Friday. Yes.
Exactly.
This Friday is Fight TV.
So. Yep. So, that's one of the things I, when I'm done here, I got to put in my order now, just to make sure I have it. And the good thing, again, too, with Fight TV, as well as the network, is, you know, you can go back and watch things at your own leisure, watch it again. So I highly encourage everyone to check it out. And get ready for hopefully a little more capacity coming up here in the next couple of months, and hopefully people will be traveling more to Vegas, which we're starting to see. So hand in hand, maybe we'll start getting some bigger shows down the line with bigger audiences, which would be spectacular.
Yeah, we're hoping May 14th. We're looking at a couple of outdoor spots. That way, even if the numbers don't change, we're still going to be where we could put, even if we can't put 250, you know, we might be able to do 150, 180, depending on what the capacity is. You know, if it's a 400 seater, then we might be able to get 200 people in there. And that would be, you know, May 14th is what we're looking to do. And being with GCW in town, I'm pretty sure there's going to be people from Cali and Arizona, you know, shooting in. You know, they've already announced guys like Chris Bay and Leo Rush, you know, and you know, a few other names that I'm pretty sure, you know, I know Nick Gage is back, so maybe he'll come out to Vegas. And if he does, hey, who's to say Nick Gage doesn't work an FSW show the night before?
What, Ice Williams? Put him through that now?
I'm pretty sure Ice is going to be injured that night.
Oh, man. Well, everyone, thank you very much for tuning in this week. And until next time, we'll see you later.